Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Hassan. I'll be with you for the next 30 minutes. On today's show, last year a kid from Knowlton, Quebec grabbed his toboggan and trekked through the streets in search of items to give to those in need. He collected enough stuff to fill 26-foot trucks. He's at it again this year.
My parents first they thought that was crazy. We had a whole U-Haul full of stuff and it was like, and our house was filled to the brim.
The Addams Family musical will soon take the stage at the Civic Theatre in Nelson, British Columbia.
Oh yeah, and also like figuring out how to have a severed hand move about the stage. Not totally sure about that magic that's going to happen.
Singer and songwriters Ray Legere and Janet Crawford launched their new album Foundry Town. It's dedicated to Sackville's foundries.
In working on this project, it gave me an opportunity to go back into those memories and draw from them ideas that we could then use as starting points with the songs.
And a sweet tooth story from BC, the Black Jaguar chocolate was named world finalist at the International Chocolate Awards.
Everywhere in our travels from Mexico all the way through down to the Amazon, we kept encountering cacao beans all over the place in little markets and bricks of cacao paste and things like that. So I had gotten into making cacao drinks everywhere we went and noticed there was quite a difference in the quality.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
So we start things off in Quebec, where one small initiative led by a 12-year-old boy turned into a big community effort. Around this time last year, Logan Lagu trekked through the streets of Knowlton, Quebec, in search of items to give to those living in vulnerable circumstances. What started as a small initiative eventually became a community effort. The citizens put together whatever items they could find in support of Lagu. Many volunteered their time. Lagu, with the help of his mother, is bringing the initiative back this year. As the need continues to grow, Lagu says he wants to continue his initiative for as long as possible. It's not often that we listen to a child on radio, so Logan Lagu will have all the time he needs here to explain what he does and why he jumped in. Taylor McClure is with a young Logan Lagu and Cynthia Roya, his mother, talking about their initiative to collect items for those who are living in vulnerable situations.
Well, it started off where we were looking at the news and there was a guy who died on the streets in Montreal who was homeless, and I felt really bad and I really didn't want that to happen to anybody else. So I went out with my toboggan and I told my mom to call some friends and family around here and ask them if they had any clothes that they could give to us, so we could go to Montreal and drop it off. And my parents, first, they thought that was crazy. And then after I got him to let me go and everything, then I came back and I called my parents, asking them if they could help me go up the hill, because I had so many trash bags of clothing and pants and everything and sleeping bags. So they came with the truck and they they helped me up. Then we went over to Montreal. That's how that really started.
Yeah, and the community kind of heard about what you were doing, and then donations started coming in pretty rapidly, right?
Yeah. Well, my mom posted on Facebook to see what we could get, and people just started coming, knocking at our door one after one, came and asking. We had a whole U-Haul full of stuff, and it was like the big, big U-Hauls that you drive.
Wow.
And we had a whole bunch of people help us out, and our house was filled to the brim with things. And in one room, you could barely even go in it because it was filled with clothing and everything like that.
Well, it's awesome that the community was showing support for what you were doing. And from my understanding, you're doing it again this year, right? You're collecting items again?
Yeah, well, sadly, our truck, the one that we've been using, the transmission...
The transmission blew up on us.
Yeah.
So now the house is full to the brim.
And we don't have anything to bring all the clothes to. So, we're trying to put that a bit on hold now, but...
The items keep coming in, but we've had a couple people last week bring a couple trips in with their vehicle.
Oh, nice.
So we had two people last week bring trips in for us.
Yeah, that was pretty nice of them.
And what sort of items are you looking to collect once you get your truck up and running? Have you realized that there's some specific needs of certain items?
Well, mostly sleeping bags are really helpful for them. Sweaters and mittens, really all pieces of clothing. But also toothbrushes. Mm-hmm. Since they don't have...
Like toiletries, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we take basically everything. We even take summer clothes. And as it is now, we're... My mother-in-law's house, the basement's full of summer clothes in the winter. And we have two trailers that we have. And we're putting the summer clothes in because the reality is in the summer, less items come in. But they need the summer shoes. They need the stuff.
Yeah.
And if we send the summer shoes in and the summer items, they're just going to the trash.
Yeah.
So we're storing them as it is.
The basic necessities.
You know, and even if they have a hole in them, even if the boots are not in good condition. You know, we've had people offer to go out and buy new boots. But we tell them, no, take that same money and go buy 10 pair of used boots.
Yeah, there was a guy, like, last year, he brought us a bunch of boots. And even this year now, he's brought us another couple pairs of boots. And it's just been really nice of him for what he's been doing.
He's our little helper on this side. He always calls us up. And he's like Logan's biggest supporter. He's always helping us.
That's awesome. Now, like you were both mentioning, you often drive out to Montreal to drop off the items that you collect to shelters or organizations that can distribute these items.
Yeah.
Are you able to tell us about some of these shelters or organizations that you are supporting this year?
We do all of them. Like, we do Maisons Pères. We do...
Old Brewery,
and we do a lot of the women's shelters that them we can't name, and we do Aboriginal places that also we had quite the experience. Looking what it
oh told. Yeah, well, there was this guy at the Old Brewery, and we were wondering where one of the women's shelters were, and he goes.
Because
Logan
saved a woman because we didn't know what was wrong with her because she couldn't walk, and Logan said to Mom, you know, that lady can't walk. And it's because her feet were so frozen.
Oh.
And she only had canvas shoes on. And Logan said, Mommy, look, she can't walk. So we opened the truck up. We put her in.
I gave her my socks. And because she did it more than I did. I have a bunch of pairs at home. So it was just nice for her. And she was crying. And she could barely speak that she was so cold.
And do you support any local shelters or organizations? I know that from my understanding, you help out local families.
We have a lot of calls. Lately, we've had so many calls from local people. Vicky Duke in Cowansville, she has an organization, and she's been giving us, items. And when I have items, like kitchen items and stuff, that I have too many and she needs them right off, we switch it out. And the cab, we've been giving them coats for the kids and stuff. And this is new from this year. So a lot of local families have been really desperately in need. I think with the economy, there's going to be a lot more also.
Yes.
And Logan, he takes the calls. Of course, he's a child, so he takes them. And it's like we're on the road like 20 minutes later trying to help the child. And he went through all his clothing because we heard about a 9-year-old that was really desperate for clothing. And he went through all his clothes. And of course, he emptied his wardrobe. So Mom's going to buy more stuff. We were on the road like an hour later bringing that child stuff. So the local need is amazing. And like neighboring towns like Mansonville and Bedford, we've had so many calls. So it's not only Montreal, it's a lot of local people that last year, I don't think we even realized last year that this was going to keep going and it was going to get so big. Last winter, 926-foot U-Hauls, just with what he did, and then we're like a year later, but the people we've helped, it's amazing. Like, never in my wildest dreams did I think that his little project would be, phew, so big.
You must be proud, Logan.
Yeah, really, I really didn't think it'd go this big, and I'm really proud of myself for just picking up a toboggan and going outside to pick up clothing.
Like last year when he did this, it went from him doing it one day, the next day was a snowstorm and was a snow day. So the next day, people just kept bringing the stuff. And then we had a lineup past our house, and if anybody knows where we live, past the church, with people waiting to bring the items to leave it at our house. And then we had 10 volunteers just helping sort the stuff because the U-Haul was in our parking lot. But we didn't realize how much help we needed. So we got on, he got on the phone, started calling friends and stuff. And his best friends were coming and helping. And then we had people bringing us food, people calling, and they cooked overnight to bring us stuff because the next day it was going to leave. People that we'd never really known that were there in there helping us. And we were during the pandemic, so people had the masks on.
Yes.
And people were actually out on our porch because we had no more room in the house. So to see a community come together for one child that decides that and then gets on the call, on the phone, it was just amazing.
And is this something that you hope to continue doing, Logan, for as long as you possibly can?
Yeah, well, I really, really, really want to keep on doing this. And as long as we keep getting funds and as long as people keep giving donations, I think this can keep going on for a really long time.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
A local chocolate business from out west scored high in an international competition. Black Jaguar Chocolate, a fine chocolate company located on Cortes Island in British Columbia, was named world finalist at the International Chocolate Awards. Scott Patterson and Emily Lasky, owners and founders of Black Jaguar Chocolate, began making their chocolate in Nicaragua and moved to Cortes Island during the pandemic. Journalist Louis Belcourt is with Black Jaguar Chocolate co-owner Scott Patterson.
We had been traveling through South and Central America over a seven-year period and seasonally, and then we settled full-time in Nicaragua. And everywhere in our travels from Mexico all the way through down in the Amazon, we kept encountering cacao beans all over the place in little markets and bricks of cacao paste and things like that. So I had gotten into making cacao drinks everywhere we went and noticed there was quite a difference in the quality. I started searching around Nicaragua because I knew that on the international stage, Nicaraguan cacao was starting to win some big awards. Like a company in Iceland had won the best overall in the world some years before. And that led me to some people from Denmark who have a big nursery, and they've got like over 20 different varieties of cacao trees. So similar to apples, there's many different kinds of cacao trees. And they had all taken these trees from the jungle, from the rainforest, isolated them to have particular qualities, and then were reproducing them in their own nursery, and then taking them back into the jungle and planting them under the canopy of the shade of all the other trees, and then working with the local indigenous people on harvesting them and fermenting them and drying them. So when I found these people, they were the people I was looking for. And so I sampled all the different varieties of cacao they had, and I selected this particular one that we work with as being the most interesting for us.
What about this specific bean did you really like?
There's a whole language now for cacao tasting, similar to wine tasting or scotch tasting, which I haven't actually fully comprehended yet. But basically, they sit you in a little room. It's like a laboratory, and they put a little spoonful of each different variety, and then you close your eyes and like just go through watching the flavors unfold, because cacao of this type, they call it fine cacao, is very complex in its flavors. Like, it's fruity, and it's floral, and it's earthy, and there's all this whole language to it. It's totally subjective, but just when I went through them all, this one in particular really stood out. And then I was also really interested in where it was growing, because they're grown throughout the country, but this particular tree, they had selected a certain region. It was a biosphere reserve, and I found out it's the second largest rainforest of the Amazon. And hardly anyone even knows about it. It's this huge protected area called the Basawa Biosphere Reserve on the border with Honduras and Nicaragua. And the environment is super incredible there. So when I found out that's where these trees were being grown, we focused in on that even more.
So tell us about this international competition. How did you get involved and how did you do?
I didn't really expect much. They really raised the bar. They've got international chefs now from all over the world, and they're trying to promote craft chocolate on a global scale, which is going very well. Like, it started as a small thing in the United States maybe 15 years ago, people buying direct trade sourcing, similar to the coffee that went on. They went right to the farms, they found certain varieties, they brought it back home, and then they basically built the equipment and taught themselves how to make chocolate from the tree all the way through to the bar, which up until that point had always been done in huge industrial factories in a secretive way where nobody really still knows exactly what goes on in there. And then that created like a grassroots movement that's spread all over the world now. Pretty much there's entries from everywhere now that comes in, and there's thousands of producers, and it's become, they've really raised the bar. So in 2019 with our company in Nicaragua, we won a bronze for our dark chocolate, but then we entered the Americas this year. We were a few percentage points away from winning anything, and then we entered the world for our drinking chocolate and didn't really expect much, but then when they put us in the world finalists, that was pretty cool. Because we're still a very small micro company, it really speaks for the quality of our cacao that we get. We made it to the finalists with a pretty high score, so that's a pretty good place to be working from.
That feedback from the competition seems so valuable. What did you learn from the feedback that was given?
We're using a traditional Mexican recipe, which is actually Montezuma's recipe from the Spanish explorers documented it. So we recreated Montezuma's drinking chocolate recipe as best we could with a couple substitutions. And they had mentioned that, yeah, like we should work on refining the ratio of certain ingredients that were in that to balance it out. Because these are chefs, right? So they're like, notice these details. So that kind of thing. And I haven't gone over all of it yet. One of them is the astringent part, which would that come from, because the cacao beans get cracked and then you have to remove the husk. And you want a certain amount of husk in there because that's got the theobromine in it, which is what gives you the stimulating effect. But it also adds a slight astringent taste. So it's like you can control how much or how little of the husk remains in when you grind it. So they're recommending, yeah, like remove more of the husk. So that kind of thing. And we're learning, Harvard University just came out with a study this year that they're calling it groundbreaking on the benefit to heart health. So everyone kind of relates to chocolate as a heart medicine, but there's actually a quite scientific part to that now that if anybody's interested, you could check it out. Just look into the Harvard cacao study on heart health, and it turns out if it was a pharmaceutical, it'd be like a multi-billion dollar potential patent. But because it's cacao, and especially in this form like this, there's like enormous health benefits to it as well that people could look into if they're interested.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
The Addams Family, a spooky gothic family, will continue to unsettle their neighbors at the Civica Theatre in Nelson, British Columbia. They will be sending out bone-chilling entertainment in the form of the Addams Family musical. The Nelson Arts Council will spend the new year scouting for talent to include in its anticipated 20-person cast, who together will embody the spooky cult classic Addams Family. More with the journalist John Roon in British Columbia.
Creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family.
If you're feeling frosty right now, just wait until the last weekend of May when things will get chilly at the Civic Theatre in Nelson. Local Nelson District Arts Council rep and theatre contractor Sydney Black says her production company is getting ready to put on the Addams Family musical. The musical is based on the long-running cult classic TV series about the unsettling family who spends their days among bubbling cauldrons, mysterious occurrences, and sharing the space with a walking hand.
It's going to be about a 20-person cast, so that's super exciting. There's probably 10 lead roles, quote-unquote lead roles, and then there's 10 supporting roles. So there's lots and lots of space for, you know, people who are like, I'm a dancer, but I don't sing, or I'm a singer, but I don't dance. Like, there's all sorts of space and roles for all kinds of people, so we're really, really stoked.
The musical first premiered on Broadway in 2010 and has won multiple awards. It has since been seen in multiple countries around the world. Sydney Black says her and the team have a few things to get right to capture the gothic vibe of the musical and bring it to Nelson.
Oh, yeah, and also like figuring out how to have a severed hand move about the stage. Not totally sure about that magic that's going to happen. But yeah, we're really, really looking forward to being all together again and doing these big shows. They've been such a staple of the community for the last decade, and so it's nice to kind of be back at it.
And the announcement couldn't have come at a better time, as the spinoff Wednesday, based on the Addams Family, is currently getting big attention on social media, where users are performing viral dances to the soundtrack. Black says this was all a big coincidence.
Well, we've been talking about this before, pre-Wednesday. I feel like a bit of a trendsetter, to be honest. No, I'm just joking. But yeah, it's really interesting how serendipitous it was that we were like, we're going to do this show. And then a couple weeks later, the Wednesday phenomenon happened. And now we're all going to be brushing up on our TikTok dances so we can get that promotion happening effectively.
Reporting in Nelson, John Roon.
Sweet.
You're listening to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Hassan. Local musicians Ray Legere and Janet Crawford just launched their new album, Foundry Town, featuring 10 new original songs dedicated to Sackville's enterprise and faucet foundries, which started 150 and 170 years ago. The album is part of a commemorative year for the foundries, which also included a book and a play by local author Susan Amos. This isn't the first collaboration for Legere and Crawford. They also worked together in 2019 to create a musical project celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Intercolonial Railway in Sackville. Janet Crawford lived in town when the foundries were still major employers in Sackville and has woven some of that experience into the songs, which she says are really an homage to all working people. Erica Butler met with singers and songwriters Ray Legere and Janet Crawford.
So is this a true like collaborative project? Do you bring in, you sit in the studio together and work out these songs?
For sure, yes. We get together and Janet has some ideas based around maybe a lyric or a phrase based around the foundry, since that's the project we're working on. And then we find a nice melody that goes along with it, some nice chords, something different. That's what I can bring to the table. I listen to a lot of different musics, and so throw something together that does sound different than everything else that's out there, and base everything around the foundry for this project, and it's all original, and it turned out pretty good, I think.
I love to sing. I'm a singer, and I like to write, and so a lot of the lyrics, I come up with lyrics or poems, and then bring them to Ray, and I'm always amazed at how what seems to be a really simple idea can get, in the right hands, developed into a really interesting song that has layers and layers and layers. And all of the musicians who have played on this CD, as with any work that Ray does, all of these musicians who come to the project are absolutely outstanding.
I'm privileged to know all these different musicians from different bands in the area and in the States. And now with the internet, we can fly in different tracks, which we did. Roger Williams down in Connecticut, he sent up some dobro tracks, and an upright bass player in Toronto sent me down some tracks. So and Georgie Bear in Halifax, he has his own studio, so he threw in his jazz guitar. He's an amazing player. They're all amazing players.
Your father's back is bent with years. Your mother's heart is worn. Your children look for solitude amid the noise and scorn.
What was the research like for this? Getting in the frame of mind of, you know, what life was like when the foundries were at their height. How did you get that feeling and even the information about it?
Well, I grew up in Sackville, so I remember very, very clearly what it was like when the foundry whistles blew, and when, you know, 400 people went to work every day, and what it was like on Friday night after they all got paid, right? I remember those days. I'm that old. I also had the opportunity to work on an art project with two other women, where we were given permission to go into the molding shop of Enterprise Foundry in 1979. And for a year, I would go in getting to know the molders, watching their process, understanding the sand casting process, and worked with a Super 8 black and white film and made a documentary. So it's very short. You know, it's only 9 minutes long, and it's old and shaky and 40 years old and black and white and silent, but it is quite an interesting look upon that process. And, of course, it's all gone now, right?
So it's interesting you say you remember the whistles. Mm-hmm. I gather there was two different whistles for the different foundries. Is that true?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I lived on Union Street, so the only whistle we heard was Enterprise.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But it was interesting. It was a very vibrant time in the community, and it, in working on this project, gave me an opportunity to go back into those memories and draw from them ideas that we could then use as starting points with the songs.
That was Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. So that's it for us at Viewpoints. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be off for the next few weeks, but we'll stay with you through reruns of past shows. I want to take this time to thank our team, our national coordinators Maureen McEwen and Stéphane Bénard, our journalists, of course, this week, Erica Butler, John Roon, Taylor McClure, and Louis Belcourt, and all the journalists who contributed to the show throughout the year, and there are many of them. A shout out to the whole team at the Community Radio Fund of Canada, which produces Viewpoints, and its French counterpart, Point de Vue, and to our listeners, of course, you, who keep us company. Merci. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Please tune in to all our stories on canada-info.ca and find us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. We leave you with Chris Rea and, as ever popular, Driving Home for Christmas. Happy holidays to all of you. See you next year. Feet on holy ground.
Christmas.